This is BSD.
Hello, I'm Gianluca Baroni.
And I'm Chris Stevenson.
And welcome to the Media Weekly podcast from PhD. On the show, we and some very special guests break down each week's media agenda, making some leaps into what it all means for communications and marketing.
Coming up on this week, we're talking retail, media, and commerce with Frank Kochanashi, the CEO of Transact. We're talking about how you break down the silos between commerce, media, and how we migrate beyond sales into thinking about relationship value measures to really get the most from commerce data. So a fascinating conversation coming up in this episode around commerce, but a lot else is happening besides. Here's Pollyanna with the Media Weekly News.
Hi everyone, Pollyanna Ward here, and I'll be sharing with you the top stories from the world of advertising this week. For my first story, I'm talking about Discord, who have just acquired popular teen social app Gas. If you're not familiar with either of these, Discord first gained traction with gaming communities, where users could join servers to live chat to other gamers whilst playing. It's a bit like MSN meets Slack, with built-in widgets and games to keep communities active. And within servers, similarly to Slack, you can have different groups talking about different topics. On the other hand, Gas is an anonymous polling app that toppled TikTok off the App Store charts back in October and was named the hottest app right now in the Wall Street Journal. Gas users answer polls to give classmates anonymous positive feedback, a refreshing take on social media, which now has over a million daily active users. There's not much else that has been shared about the terms of this acquisition. However, Discord has for a while been looking to expand its user base beyond gamers. For example, we've seen sneaker communities, luxury brand servers, and even fast food lover communities spring up. What this does point to, however, is a broader trend of community-based social channels. We've had years now of mass broadcast social channels with users putting up posts to reach those beyond their close social circle. And we seem to be coming back to the origins of social, to speak to those whom you either know or share a passion with. This leads me to see social media as being split into two categories, broadcast social and community social, with the former including apps such as TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, and the latter including BeReal, Discord, and Gas. I'm sure this won't be the first acquisition of its kind, with bigger, more established platforms leaning on the expertise of these newer apps to keep their platforms relevant for generations to come. For my second story, if you are single and ready to mingle, this campaign might just help you find your next date. Bumble have partnered with Netflix on a new campaign called Find the Date You've Been Watching For, which will be running for the next couple of months with an integrated campaign targeting users in the US, UK, and Canada. The campaign is about helping users find their next date based on their shared love of Netflix shows, which they'll uncover through in-app quizzes. The campaign has all the features of best-in-class media planning, with a paid, owned, and earned approach, including big, huge billboards in major cities and Netflix stars asking users questions in their weekly quiz show, Netflix Nights, to help bring people together. The partnership is a fantastic match for these two brands, with data from Bumble showing that 78% of respondents find it easier to talk to matches when they have the same TV and film taste. Further to this, it was reported in The Drum by Bumble officials that there is a higher percentage of good chats when a question game is played. One of the interesting parts of this campaign was that it was developed by both brands' in-house teams, nodding to that broader trend we've seen in the ad industry of in-housing. It's also great to see brands dig into the data they're sat on to find meaningful ways to make relationships better and improve the user experience. The key takeaway for brands from this campaign is to use the data you have to find interesting behaviours and attitudes and what could then be built or improved as a result of this. Let us know if you tune into the Bumble Quiz Nights. They are every Monday until March 13th. And finally, TikTok has a secret policy called heating. This term was discovered in documents obtained by Forbes and refers to the practice of manually promoting certain videos in order to make them go viral. It's certainly no secret that tech companies have the ability to override algorithms to boost content or remove it. For example, during the pandemic, it was important for platforms such as Facebook and TikTok to ensure misinformation wasn't spread and to promote factually correct information about the COVID-19 virus. However, the process of heating does raise questions over whether the content you're being served is because you're interested in it or it's because TikTok wants you to see it. This has been suggested to be for a number of reasons, such as to court brands or influencers over to their platform. According to Forbes, they see heating as the strategy employed by TikTok to move their platform away from lip-sync videos and dancing teens. Indeed, a document referred to as the Mint Heating Playbook says the purpose of this feature is to promote diverse content, push important information, and support creators. If you make good use of it, heating resources will bring a leverage effect. A small amount of heating resources will bring about growth of mid-range users and a more diverse content pool. The story grabbed my attention because it speaks to two different challenges in the tech world. One of machine learning and AI to make decisions, and the other to use human curation and intervention. The solution proposed so far seems to be around making it clearer as to why a video is showing on your For You page, so that if you are in doubt, then at least you can find out why. And that's the top stories from me, Pollyanna Ward. Thank you for listening, and until next time, have a great week.
Thanks to Pollyanna for the news and another non-stop media week. What did you make of that, Chris?
Yes, it's interesting. The Discord moving beyond gaming is really interesting. Like, it's one of the next generation of social platforms we're seeing coming up. And we've been talking a lot about latter part of this year into this year. It's very much what I'm calling small social. I think we're beyond the days of big social, the big, huge, global, billion person platforms. I think we're entering an age of much more small social, where people want more specific, relevant ways to connect with people around specific topics, whether it's gaming. They want smaller social circles. They want circles they can control, where they're more comfortable with who they're connecting to. And I think the Discord move that we see in the news this week, I think it's an example of what I'm calling small social. In the age of small social is upon us.
100%. And actually, rather than feeling overwhelmed by all of these new platforms springing up, I think it's maybe quite positive. There's just more choice than ever in terms of what to share and who with, whether it's just your friends, a like-minded community, the small social point you just mentioned, or perhaps you do want to go even broader than that. And it's great that there is the choice.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a really interesting parallel, I think, in what we're seeing in media. So any marketer listening to this will know that over the last year or so, we've been getting a handle on how we work in a post-cookie world and what we do to reach people without just data dumping and using those trails to resurface content. And of course, one of the most important strategic and relevant ways of doing that is through context, bringing context back. How do we really understand the context in which people are going to be consuming content, and how do we connect and engage with them in meaningful ways? And I think there's a parallel here. I think there's that same parallel with small social, which is our social interactions are becoming much more contextualized, much more relevant to either the content space we're in or the people we're with. And we're looking less for these big platforms that can do anything and everything to everyone. Instead, we're looking for those platforms that can be much more contextual, much more small, and much more in the moment.
100%. Another piece of news that I found really interesting was that TikTok one in terms of manually heating videos through human intervention. What did you make of that, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, social content platform occasionally tweaks the algorithm to promote certain content, shock horror. I think all platforms are going to have ways and means by which they push content, promote content, move content around, get content in front of different views, and of course the news feed is the secret sauce of all these platforms, and it's the TikTok news feed that's really propelled its astronomical growth in the last 12 to 24 months. But it is interesting to see, you know, a platform like TikTok that was built on that idea of content that is so smartly algorithmically selected for you, like catnip, you know. So it's interesting, a platform like that allegedly being able to heat certain content to make sure it goes viral.
Absolutely. It just seems like we come across this week on week, but you know, across the board, it just seems like we're on a knife edge in terms of engaging with platforms that are prioritizing algorithmic and AI driven content, or those that prioritize a human touch. And it's really interesting to follow that debate, but also to consider that maybe there is magic somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and I think it touches on the third story, you know, the whole Netflix Bumble partnership is a lovely idea, a lovely partnership. It's contextual, right? And it's a really smart strategic partnership. And it touches to that point that actually, you know, going beyond ad to think about the context and the ways you can connect with people in relevant ways, and what other brands you can connect with to do that. It goes right to the heart of what we do in marketing, and it's great to see really smart, strategic, contextual solutions and ideas come to the fore at the moment in that.
So it's fair to say that there's lots to stay across, much to discuss, and as always, we want you to be part of the conversation. If you have any questions, thoughts, and opinions on this week's news, or anything that's shaping your media week, please do get in touch with us. You can reach us by email at maketheleap@phdmedia.com. That's maketheleap@phdmedia.com.
Up next on the Media Weekly, Pollyanna sat down with Frank Kochanash. He's the CEO for Transact, Omnicom's commerce division. It's a fascinating conversation. If you've ever wondered about how you break down the silos between commerce and media and retail media and that emergent force of retail media, if you're thinking about how you can track, measure, and analyze the data that's coming from your commerce platforms to better drive results, or if you wake up wondering how you can migrate beyond sales into relationship value measures as a better KPI and indicators of your business, well, you've come to the right podcast. Frank and Pollyanna get under the skin of all of that in this conversation. Over to Pollyanna and Frank.
The impact of e-commerce is unmissable. Since the pandemic, millions of us have become reliant on online shopping. In fact, in 2021, retail e-commerce sales were an estimated $4.9 trillion worldwide. And by 2025, it's predicted this number will reach approximately $7.4 trillion. So how can marketers evolve their e-commerce strategies to maximize their sales opportunities? To find out, in this episode, we speak with Frank Kochanash, CEO of Transact, Omnicom Group's connected commerce consulting and e-retail execution service, to understand the latest commerce opportunities and learn how to best integrate e-commerce into overarching marketing and sales activities. To kick off, here's Frank's take on the latest challenges facing brands in the e-commerce space.
Well, I think in e-commerce, commerce broadly, even, it is this convergence of customer experiences that we call connected commerce. But from a brand's point of view, from an agency, their partner's point of view, is how do we best manage that, both in terms of providing and ensuring we provide great experience to the end customer, to the consumer and the user and shopper, the buyer of the product, but also the right data and the right management for the brand to optimally manage all aspects of those, of that consumer engagement. It is, you know, the breakdown of silos. And it's, you know, as I described what Transact is doing, I do think we are addressing this, or trying to address this key challenge. It may or may not be the biggest challenge of a brand. I'll touch on a couple others, but I think this collision of commerce and media is forcing a lot of restructuring or reconsideration of how brands engage with consumers in terms of driving sales and building brand equity and how those actually work together. The new e-commerce and retail media are kind of stressing the boundaries, literally, of lower funnel, bottom funnel conversion performance activities and brand building equity, and making it harder, or actually it's making it possible to measure both against metrics that have not historically been used. But that, so for example, now it is increasingly possible to measure where, you know, brand media in terms of its effect on sales, lower funnel activities in terms of its effect on brand equity. But that stresses a lot of the organizational and structures that have been put in place for decades at brands and at agencies for that matter. So navigating those changes, I think, is just a very major transition that the industry is going through right now.
I really like that last point there that you mentioned around, you know, sort of the brand team, sitting on one side and have historically only probably ever measured, I guess, slightly more longer term metrics and brand equity measures, whereas actually they can also measure the sales sides too and vice versa. And I think you mentioned retail media a couple of times there. If you had to sort of define what retail media is, what would you sort of say it was in sort of simpler terms?
I think probably this definition is retail media is media products and data offered by retailers directly to brands, can use that for a variety of marketing and sales purposes. What's most distinctive about it, I would say, is that the media and the related data is being offered by retailers, benefits from all of that direct purchase activity that the retailer has, which makes it distinctive from other media publishers, TV, linear TV and whatnot, that have wide audiences, but not necessarily direct connection and measurable connection to sales, whereas the retail media does. But as I noted, retail media, those are great conversion signals. It can actually be used for different objectives, which is meaning sales conversion or consideration building, brand building, increased reach, in a perhaps more targeted way. So that's how I would define retail media and a little bit more about how it's being used.
No, that's great. I think can't really seem to go a day without sort of hearing another sort of retail media opportunity surfacing in sort of the marketing news at the moment. So I think we've talked a little bit around some of the different challenges. I guess when it comes to winning the digital shelf, you know, what do you think that brands or marketers need to be doing differently? You know, are there any skills that they might need to learn or unlearn when it comes to winning that digital shelf online?
Well, I think, you know, the things you need to do that like make the digital shelf a little bit different than other media or physical shelf is that, you know, an end-to-end complete set of the engagement and approach is needed, because there's the logistics and supply chain aspects, which we're still grappling with, which is, do we have the products? Are they in stock? Are they in stock in the right place? There's catalog management and catalog optimization, which is often underappreciated in terms of its importance. All the related metadata, not just the first four fields of the setup form, but the other 20 and 30 help make sure that those products are properly categorized, showing up in the right place, and for as many keyword searches as possible. Then the content itself, every retailer has a slightly different serving algorithm, but you should be maximizing the organic opportunity. And that's where content and content optimization comes into play, augmented by paid investment. Sort of the online version of slotting fees, but determining how aggressive you want to be. I think, you know, those are the key things to do to win on the digital shelf. I think advanced topics are looking at and considering how to test the impact of different aspects of content and how to test the interrelationships between paid search, typically called paid search on the digital shelf, and organic. There is intuitive understanding on these things and best practices, but quantitatively testing and using testing tools that are available on some of the retailers are important things to kind of build the data behind that intuition of optimization.
And would you say that this is something that OMC Transact can help clients with? You know, have you got any examples of perhaps how you're helping brands at the moment deliver on winning the digital shelf?
Yeah, certainly. Our customer search behavior analysis looks at and examines in a very detailed level what search terms are driving traffic for a particular product, and then assesses that against the product, the content on that product page, and identifies opportunities, which are then, in most cases, like pre-post tested for impact. And likewise, kind of pulsing tests, pre-post tests for the impact of paid search spend on organic rank for a set of keywords. I think keyword determination and what we mean by the shelf is also a factor of consideration. You know, it's been said and it's true, there's not one digital shelf for a product. There's tens of thousands of digital shelves, depending on what the search query is. And that varies. So brands need to make a deliberate choice about what they mean by a shelf, or even getting very specifically what keywords are most important for them to win or serve for. And that may change over time, what those keywords are in, you know, as we are now in the run up to Halloween might be different than what those keywords are in April on pre or post Easter, for example. So understanding and appreciating that the shelf, at least digitally, changes over time, or what you want to prioritize as the shelf changes over time. That also kind of lends into your point about our services. Well, we update those keywords, both in terms of how we measure the shelf, but also what we insert and optimize into the content.
I really like that example you gave there, that it's probably something that seems really obvious, but yeah, that a brand wouldn't show up for Halloween where, you know, if you take probably a popular coffee brand sort of offering up their autumnal drinks versus, say, their summer drinks. So I know that's not something that you might necessarily.
And there's some limitation. Yeah, there's ways to do that and ways you can't do that. There's organically and paid, and that's where they can work together quite effectively.
Today, creating a media campaign requires a diverse range of experts from different organizations and different locations. Providing a shared online environment where they can build a campaign is now a necessity. Omni Studio brings everyone together into one campaign planning platform. Marketers can explore existing media campaigns, create new ones, and collaborate in their development. Change how you plan your marketing with Omni Studio from PhD Media, the only collaborative campaign planning platform of its kind. Omni Studio, creating remarkable campaigns, creating remarkable growth. Check out phdmedia.com to find out more.
In the second half of this episode, we hear more from Frank Kochanash, CEO of Transact, about how e-commerce is evolving. But first, here's Frank's thoughts on how to best connect physical commerce to digital.
What about brands that have physical footprints versus, say, a brand that is just pure D2C? So these brands that have historically always had physical retailer outlets, how do you connect their offline shopping experience to their online shopping experience?
Great question. And in some way, like the challenge and the opportunity is harder for those brands with, and I think they generally correlate with being kind of more mature, bigger brands where they're sold significantly in store through retailers, as well as online through marketplaces or retailers or even D2C, versus another set of brands, often like where they be the challenger, call them challenger brands, or kind of grew up with a largely a D2C or social presence. And like, that's a very controllable environment for them. The challenge, you know, for what you said, like those brands with a physical presence, a multi-channel presence is, and your question about how do they make the connections? This is where I think the increased measurability of e-commerce and that retail media innovation, which is really scaled up, say, in the last 6 years or so, creates, I was positioning this as challenge before, but it's also opportunity. The ability to reach and engage consumers based on actual purchase signals creates that opportunity to make those connections. However, for privacy reasons and for retailers' own interests, like that data is very valuable. The idea or hope of making a one-to-one connection through retail media is probably not realistic. Nevertheless, rarely do we actually need a, you know, such a one-to-one. It's more about the information and the knowledge to be able to make smart marketing decisions at a segment and micro segment level. And I think usage of clean rooms, something we're leaning into a lot, help bridge those gaps between media and commerce, between, you know, the different kind of walled gardens, if you will, of retail media and big publishers, even like Facebook, Google, et cetera, that are out there. And we've been quite, as I said, leaned in, and there's several ways to do this, but I think clean rooms is one of those that help make those connections. Though, as I said, I think we will, this is an evolving space, and, you know, one that will, you know, at least in my view, is pursuing, you know, we should aspire to make, gain information that is actionable, firstly at a segment, then a micro segment level, not necessarily needing to get to a, you know, an individual matched level, which may not be possible or even desirable for a period of time.
So coming on to another aspect, I suppose, of brands kind of making this move to, you know, improving their e-commerce offering, I guess there is a sort of question that floats around, possibly in the back of the sales team's heads, but, you know, how does a brand stay profitable moving to online? I think you've mentioned a couple of things already around maybe certain SKUs aren't profitable or things like that. But yeah, is there anything that, any advice that you would have for a brand that's thinking, okay, how do I transfer, you know, washing up liquid or shoes or something onto online? How do they make sure that that's still a profitable avenue for them?
So there's, I guess, two kind of points of points there is, like, I would not like necessarily admit that the online channel per se is less profitable or unprofitable. Depends a lot in the categories and the unit economics of the product. A $2 can of soup that's heavy and relatively low cost versus a, you know, lightweight piece of jewelry that can be very high margin, but low cost to ship, for example. So the dynamics of the product matter. And that gets into a lot of the profitability depends on complete measurement of the unit economics, like really understanding that. And that is an area, that's the first area, like broadly understanding what your unit economics are. So not just purchase price, cost of goods minus your, you know, the allowances with the retailer, but all the other aspects that go into making that sale, which include things like customer returns, rates, loss, you know, theft, damage, and the marketing costs, the content and the marketing, like the paid search and retail media, as we were discussing. So all that goes into understanding what your profitability is. And then within a category, you can do different things with the, you know, pack size architecture, and the product, how it's shaped. You can, you know, we can maximize the profitability, and in our consulting practice and operations of supply chain, that's typically where a lot of that kind of innovation happens. But the key point number one is you have to understand the full unit economics so that you can manage the channel well. The second point I have is, I think we have to understand what kind of like product they're, you know, that we're selling. Because I always emphasize control as the first thing to establish when you're looking at a channel, when you're looking at e-commerce. And when you look at e-commerce, you have to think about Amazon, Tmall. It's maintaining control of your distribution and control of your brand. And there's really, I think, two ways to go. Like, and I usually maintain that you need to have tight control of your brand, because as soon, and your distribution, as soon as that you lose control of that distribution, your products will start being shown for and listed for sale everywhere, including Amazon and Tmall. And you can lose control of price. You risk losing control of brand equity. So maintaining control is a really important aspect, and I'd say the fundamental aspect to being profitable and maintaining profitable. Control your distribution, know where it's being sold and how it's being sold and marketed. Now, there's another side of that, which you know, is like widely distributed brands. Some brands are by nature made for wide distribution, and it would actually be counter to their economics to try and limit that. And at this point, it would be almost impossible to limit it. In that case, the priority is really that the first point, truly understand your unit economics and what your profitability is on each online channel and your D2C channel versus your Amazon versus your Kroger profitability will be different. Make sure you measure that completely and manage to that profitability, because those products just, they are out there. And so you need to manage it, you know, profitability and make sure it's profitable on each channel.
I think that kind of leads quite nicely into my next question there, when you talk about measuring, you know, not just the unit economics, but also measuring success. You know, once you've got all of your ducks in a row and you're selling online, what sort of KPIs are you recommending clients look at?
So once we get, you know, of course, the usual, you know, e-commerce and media metrics that a brand would look at, sales growth, contribution profit, margin, media terms, the return on ad spend, etc. There's a next level of incrementality, like increment. We always encourage incremental return on ad spend and do the testing to inform that, so that you have a better sense of what is incremental versus not incremental. And then I, you know, kind of in the medium to longer term here, I think brands, including all brands, even those widely distributed ones, will increasingly be engaging with consumers and shoppers more directly, even if it's through a marketplace platform that where the direct connection of the consumer is not firsthand available. And this gets into them thinking more about relationship values. And so we encourage, and I encourage, like consideration of cost per customer acquisition, customer churn, lifetime value of that customer. Currently, for many brands, this is extraordinarily difficult to measure or not possible to measure. But these are those are metrics that with the increased measurability of all aspects of the commerce experience become possible. And then you start looking at customer churn. And I think there's things like cohort analysis that you can do based on when you acquired a customer or through what marketing vehicle you acquired a customer. How long do they purchase, you know, like what's their repurchase and the lifetime value associated with that? But kind of migrating beyond the initial sales metric and the sales performance to more of relationship value measures like lifetime value and cost per customer acquisition, not necessarily sales and sales acquisition, though of course those are still important.
That's great. I quite like that you know, you sort of mentioned, yes, there's all the ones that marketers probably are using day to day and know inside out, but actually bringing in some of those other, I guess, lagging measures or, you know, long-term measures as well into their commerce efforts, which sort of feels counterintuitive because the whole sort of narrative around e-commerce feels like it's immediate, it's now, but actually we also need to take a step back and look at that broader piece, you know, are they also coming back and what do they think of us?
E-commerce used to be the domain of specialist retailers and digital companies. But in the days when we are always connected, ready to click and buy on our phones, it has become an important sales channel for almost every business. Competing for attention in this space is fierce, which is why connected media strategies have never been more important in driving traffic to digital points of sale. Getting these strategies right isn't easy, but as Frank Kochanash suggests, investing in the right partners to help you track, measure, and analyze the data you are collecting from your touch points will pay off in the long term via consistent sales and ultimately growth. I'm Pollyanna Ward, and thanks for listening. Join us again next time on The Shift Sessions.
And that's it for this episode of the Media Weekly from PhD. Remember, you can get in touch with any feedback or questions for the team here at the Media Weekly by emailing us at maketheleap@phdmedia.com. A big thank you to Frank Kochanash for joining us, and of course to Pollyanna for that great interview and for the weekly news. To find out more about PhD and what we do, just head to phdmedia.com.
We'll be back next week with a great conversation on clean rooms and how they are shaping marketing in a post-cookie world. You don't want to miss it. So make sure you subscribe to the Media Weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, enjoy making some media leaps in the week ahead, wherever you are in the world. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.